Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
People have been pairing up for eons. This is because human beings are designed to live in community. Most of us aren't meant to live alone, and we really don't want to anyway. And despite the concerns about its success, about 90% of young people today say that one of their goals is to be married. Now, the whole idea is falling in love is natural. It's kind of like getting pregnant. It happens all the time. But just because something is natural doesn't mean that nothing more needs to be learned. And unlike raising children, the normal challenges of marriage are often kept in the dark. There just isn't a lot of support during the marriage because most people don't know what they don't know about the unique relationship that is marriage. That is the entire premise of this show. My goal is to provide information so that people can create the marriages that they desire. Sometimes this works, and sometimes it doesn't. And it's equally important to be able to talk about how to deal with the end of a marriage when that's the option that you're facing. So joining me today to talk about what you can expect when it doesn't work out are Drs. Astro and Danielle Teller. He is a computer scientist who oversees Google X, and she is a physician. They are also the authors of Sacred Cows, The Truth About Divorce and Marriage. So thank you for joining me on the program. I really appreciate it, and I really do appreciate the perspective that you're bringing in the book. So tell me a little bit about the Sacred Cows and how you came to write the book.
Well, first, thanks for having us. We both have been previously married and were going through our each respective divorces at about the same time. And we ended up spending a lot of time together talking about our experience of going through the process of divorce. And as scientists, we both started to observe that there was something kind of broken in the process.
Right.
We've described these in this book that we ended up writing together called Sacred Cows as sacred cows. Essentially, narratives. We describe seven distinct narratives that society has created, that we collectively, perhaps unconsciously, have created as boogeymen. And the purpose of these narratives in society is to create fear and shame on the part of anybody who is considering ending their marriage.
Okay, hang on. Now, I agree with you that these narratives exist, and I also think there's a narrative, there are lots of narratives around getting married in the first place. But I guess I'm questioning the idea that they're purposely created around shame, and so help me understand that aspect from your perspective, that they were purposely created.
Well, just to be clear, I said perhaps unconsciously.
I mean
that they have the narrative has a goal, but it is quite possible that no one person ever had that goal in mind.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's really okay. That our society promotes marriage. Our society, for I think historical reasons, we're not experts on the history
right.
of marriage, but we want people to form stable relationships because that has tended to be good for our society. And so these narratives that our society has come up with promote the goal of creating stable married relationships.
Sure. And for much of our history, divorce was either impossible to get or extraordinarily difficult. And that probably started changing in the late 60s. So yes, there is a historical precedent for promoting marriage. I do agree with that.
And I guess the distinction that we're drawing is that if the end of a marriage comes, it turns out to be the right thing to do for a marriage to end, there are a set of very painful things about ending the marriage that are very real, and it's not a social narrative that they're painful. It's emotionally painful. That's not a social narrative. It's just emotionally painful. It's financially very complicated and painful for a lot of people. That's not a social narrative. That's just a fact.
Right. Yeah, that truly is a fact of life.
Right. So we're not actually taking any issue with the facts that divorce can often be very painful for everybody involved, for the community, for the spouse, for the children, etc.
Right.
But there are a set of other stories about what will happen or what it means about all the people involved that aren't actually connected to the truth, mm-hmm. that aren't even connected properly to the earlier stories that society also promotes about what you should be thinking about yourself and the people around you on the way into the marriage.
Right.
And when you find these hypocrisies, these conflicting narratives, you realize that society is not actually being honest with itself, that it has an agenda. And all we're trying to do is point out that there are these conducts and these narratives, and that there might be an agenda, perhaps hidden, but not on the part of any one of us, that we all sort of unconsciously
right.
perpetrate.
I call
this.
It the shoulds. I talk about the great they, whoever they are, who've decided that this is what everybody is supposed to be doing, and nobody really stops and says, well, wait a minute, who are you, and who put you in charge, and why do I have to do what you say, as opposed to really doing some individual self-analysis or, you know, trying to figure out, does this should, which I don't like that word, actually apply to me? Am I doing this because somebody else, the great they, says I should, or at least something that resonates with me in my life?
And I think that these narratives are, they're even more subtle than the shoulds. They do involve the shoulds, but I think that we have all internalized them so much that we're not even aware that we have these ideas in the back of our heads. And we're not even aware that there are people saying we should or shouldn't
right.
do this. I mean, before I went through my own divorce, I said a lot of the things that in the book we say are not helpful to people who are getting divorced. Like, you know, there's no such thing as passion in marriage. You're crazy if you think you get out of this marriage that you're going to find it somewhere else. I unconsciously thought that people who were getting divorced were really selfish, much more selfish than people who stayed married. A lot of things that I didn't consciously believe them because I didn't sort of take these ideas out and gaze at them in the light of logic and say, is this a really rational thing for me to think? But I definitely had this set of ideas in my head. And then when I went through my own divorce, I started thinking, wow, like I really hadn't considered before what my attitudes were. And I think a lot of people don't because we're brought up in a society where, you know, we were taught about Cinderella and true love and you should get married. And, when someone tells you should do something, at least you might examine that and say, well, is that true? But when it's an unconscious idea that's embedded in the back of your mind, you don't even question it.
So maybe we can give you a sort of super short version of each of the seven cows as a structure for sort of poking at some of these
sure,
ideas.
Sure, that would be really helpful.
So one of them is the concept of commitment, which we refer to as the holy mm-hmm. cow. And obviously there are some people who have religious beliefs about commitment of marriage, and we're not taking any issue with that. If you believe that you're obligated to do something, that's fine. We have nothing to say about it. But our concern is that what is being promised on the way into marriage is unbelievably vague. We all say, until death do us part, as though dying were some kind of goal, on our way into marriage. But what we are never clear of is what's really going to happen if we fall out of love. Because we make this promise, which is that I will love you forever, when that's not actually something that's in the control of either spouse. You can promise what? To stay with the person forever, even if you don't love them. But that's a pretty ugly thing to say at a wedding.
Well, I agree with you about that. But where I slightly disagree, and I do realize, because I see this all the time, I mean, one of my least favorite expressions is, I love you, but I'm not in love with you anymore. And that's, I think, what you're talking about, this whole romantic setup and people not really understanding what they're getting into when they make this lifelong commitment. But I do agree, believe that there are things people can do to keep the love alive and existing in their marriage. And I think that most of us just don't even know what that is. Well, that, so we kind of fall into that.
That might be possible, but let's tease apart two separate issues. Maybe Danielle will take the true love the second, but I'm talking about the issue of commitment independent of whether love can be sort of rekindled for a second. Should we find ourselves, and some people do, in the spot where the love is gone? Let's just say, let's take it as read that this is true for Bob and Sally.
Okay.
What have they really committed to each other? This is unbelievably not clear. Because if Bob wants to leave the marriage and Sally wants him not to leave, Sally may remember the commitment that they made when they got married as being that under no circumstances will they ever stop being married. And Bob may remember it much more as an aspiration that they stay in love, but now that they're not in love anymore, he doesn't really feel like he signed up to be miserable for the rest of his life. Let's take it as an assumption that he is now not happy being married to her for whatever reason. Like, and the fact that we choose not to be clear on the way in, but then choose to beat each other up on the way out is a little bit disconnected. We should either cut ourselves more slack on the back end or be much more explicit on the front end about what we're promised to each other. That's the
of
the holy cow commitment.
Well, but actually, I think we should probably be doing both, giving us a little bit more leeway on getting out, but also being much clearer. And I agree, because one of the things that I think creates great stress in marriage, and it's this whole Cinderella romantic, they live happily ever after, nobody bothers to tell you how, is that there isn't clarity, there isn't discussion on the front end, there isn't a conversation about this is what I think marriage is. This is my expectation for our life together. And you present what you think it is and what your expectations are, and we actually have that conversation before we make that commitment.
Right. And this is another one of our cows, actually. That's the one true cow. It's this idea that our society promotes a narrative about love that is not really compatible with what happens in real life. So, we have all of these romantic movies, and we talk in the book about a kids movie that our daughters watched when they were tiny about, in paradise, and how she meets this prince, and there are all these obstacles to them getting married, including the fact that he's already engaged to somebody else. And the parents have arranged this marriage and they want it to happen. And then she and her little animal friends need to overcome all of these obstacles to get rid of the fiance on the day of the wedding. She, kicks her off away from the altar basically and takes her place and marries him. And our kids are supposed to be incredibly happy with this ending, the beautiful white wedding. They're in love. It's all perfect. So we promote this narrative that there is a true love, that if Barbie couldn't get together with Prince Ken, that would be absolutely terrible. If Ken married this perfectly nice other princess, his life would be really diminished and he wouldn't live his life fully. And we need for Prince Ken and Barbie to be together.
Oh, this is a scary movie. I'm so glad that my daughter was older before that movie ever showed up.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Well, that's true.
Identical movie.
Right. This, for adults.
This story that up until the moment you are married, true love is the most important thing in your life, and whoever you're with, you should kick them to the curb with abandon and go after that person who you're quote-unquote supposed to be with. This is what society tells us unbelievably explicitly in 98% of the popular culture that we consume.
Right.
And it's, for each other. And yet, the day after you get married, if you were to decide that you have now found someone who you really are supposed to be with, and that you want to kick to the curb the same person who a week ago would have been fine to kick to the curb, it is now unbelievably socially ugly to do that. Well, and so society has this little trick. This is the one true cow.
Right.
Where society says, as soon as you're married, oh, true love doesn't exist. All marriages are roughly equal. You know, he's going to leave the cap off the toothpaste just like the guy you're with right now. You might as well stay with who you're with and make it work. And either of those attitudes could be okay. but it doesn't work for us to tell people that they should believe in true love as a reason to get into marriage and then not believe in true love right after they get married if that's what it takes for them to stay
right.
married.
And I agree with you. And I, you know, this idea that there's only one right person for you on the planet is, that's actually a rather scary. I kind of believe for certain gushes that several people in the universe could actually fit. But I guess that's part of it is that people, then there's this desperation that, well, it has to be this person. And then, you know, 2 years, 4 years, 20 years later, you realize, no, this person actually was never a good fit to start with. But let's, like you said, we have all these ideas of push people into this concept. I mean, what was it? Was it Time Magazine or whoever it was that was on the cover article about, you know, that women had a greater chance of being killed by meteors than getting married after the 40 or whatever horrible statistic that thing was. It was like, oh my gosh, what are we trying to tell people?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're very confused as a society because we have needed to have these, you know, the true love doesn't exist narratives around marriage because for most of our history as a Western society, as you pointed out, divorce was not allowed. So you had to find a way to be okay with it, sort of no matter what was going on in your marriage and in your life. And now marriage is very optional and we can afford to get married just for love. And in fact, people say that's the reason people want to get married. But we haven't as a society really looked at this and figured out if we have one reason for getting married and then a different reason for needing to stay in the marriage, how do we square those things? You know, what? How do we make this so that people have the same expectations going in that they then need to have 20 years in when they're, you know, not having sex anymore and fighting about finances and don't find their partner particularly lovable? Like what, how do we square that with what we told them when they were growing up?
Well, that's my whole problem with this whole disconnect is that we have, as a society, we have all these people, it's like, you know, all the information, find the love of your life. And then they get sucked up into what we call the wedding industrial complex, where it's, you have to have this wonderful wedding. And then everything goes dark until people are in real pain and they're seeing that ending the marriage is the only way. And what I'm trying to address is the black hole of what it actually means to be married and how to try to avoid some of the things that you guys are talking about. Some of that, you know, marriage becoming sexless, which, you know, if you've listened to my show, you know that I do not believe in using the word miserable and marriage in the same sentence. That to me is like, okay, something is really off here if that's where you are, and let's see if we can do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, our book is really meant to address this issue of if you are at a point where you really feel like your marriage is not working and you're considering ending it, the book is about trying to get rid of these social pressures that create so much guilt and shame and cause more acrimony and make things worse for everybody. So we're
right.
We're not in any way marriage experts, right. So we can't really.
Well, except for the fact that both of you have each been married twice, so you at least you have some expertise.
Yeah.
Personal, yes.
Yeah.
Let me give you another example. Just another one of these narratives, maybe that'll help. One of the other ones that we find particularly interesting is the selfish cow. So there is a very strong social narrative that the person who is the dumper in a relationship, even the term dumper and dumpee creates this sort of bad guy, good guy or bad guy victim
right.
sort of split in the divorce, which is really false and not part of the problem. But if you consider that whoever's leaving the selfish person, whoever is staying or is trying to hold the marriage together is the selfless person, it really doesn't even hold up to some basic thought experiments. So if Bob and Sally are married, and Bob really wants to stay married to Sally. He did tell her on the way into the marriage that he wanted to have kids, but now he really isn't that into having kids, and he keeps stalling. And she really wants to have kids, and her clock is ticking, and she can kind of tell that Bob's never actually going to sign up for it. So let's say Sally wants to leave the marriage because – and she was clear with Bob at the beginning – that she wanted to have kids. Is she really selfish for leaving the marriage? Or is Bob actually the one who's selfish because he's staying and making it complicated for her instead of, if he really loves her, letting her go and to do this thing, which is so important to her? It's not always so complicated. It's not always so obvious who's the selfish person. And we just lay out a series of these thought experiments, which I think put to bed pretty quickly the idea that whoever is leaving is the selfish person.
Oh, I agree 100%, because a lot of times, and I see this constantly, is the person who, so in your particular example, it would be Sally, who said, you know, this is really important to me. I want to have children. And Bob did what I call making a concession, where he agreed to something he didn't really agree to. And then, of course, it's not happening, and it's creating havoc in the relationship. But in a lot of times what I see is one person says to the other person, hey, this isn't working for me. And the sexless marriage is a prime example of this, is when one partner says, I don't want to have sex with you, but you can't have sex with anybody else. It's like, no, wait a minute. That's not okay. But mm-hmm. I'm being very clear about what I need, and you are either giving me lip service or you're just ignoring me because you're perfectly happy in the relationship. That does set up an incredibly unfair dynamic. And I agree with you that it goes along with who is selfish here, because you're not actually doing anything to make your relationship better when your partner is telling you this isn't working for them.
Right, and we're not taking sides in any particular argument, in any particular marriage, only pointing out that these sort of black and white narratives we have about who's the victim and who's the bad guy are not helping as people try to sort out whether they're working them.
Right, and then it never stays just within the marriage. It goes to what I'm telling my friends, what I'm telling my family, and worse, what I'm telling our children about what's going on. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. And so we actually do try to, or many people try to, get all the people around them to pick sides, which then makes a successful divorce even more challenging.
Right. Yeah. And again, this is what we're trying to do with this book, is clear away some of the unnecessary hard feelings.
Right. So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning. I'm Les Stories, and I'm talking to Astro and Danielle Teller, authors of Sacred Cows, The Truth About Divorce and Marriage, about how we can actually have a much more productive conversation around both marriage and divorce. And if you're having some challenges in your marriage, I want to know that you aren't alone. If you want things to be different, then I encourage you to take action now. You can take a moment and send me an email or give me a call and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Kick-Ass Marriage Strategy session, where you will gain clarity about your options. You can email me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at Foundations Coaching NC, that's FoundationsCoachingNC, coachingnc.com, or call me at 919-924-0463. So let's get back to this discussion about these particular sacred cows. So what's another one of the sacred cows that really gets your guys' blood boiling?
Well, I'm going to give you, or we'll give you another one, but it's not so much that it gets our blood boiling, is we just want to open people's eyes a little bit. So one of the other ones that we have is called the innocent victim cow. And to be very clear, you know, super obvious to anyone who's gone through divorce, divorce is painful for children. We are not remotely suggesting that divorce is not painful for children. But, A, there is no evidence that bad marriages, when they stick as an alternative to divorce, are not also painful for children.
Right.
And B, and much more importantly, there is a narrative in our society that in the long run, the children of divorce fare worse, all things being equal, just because of the divorce. They fare worse emotionally, financially, professionally. And this may in fact be true, but there is not one shred of scientific statistical evidence to support this.
Well, I actually think what happens is if the acrimony from the marriage continues into the divorce, then the children aren't really any better either way. And so I think that's kind of what you're talking about, that if mom and dad are still fighting, whether they're divorced or not, then the children are still suffering. So I'm agreeing with you a little bit that there is not factual evidence, because how is the divorce going?
Right. We're also separating the suffering, which everyone suffers in a divorce, and probably everyone suffers in a bad marriage too. But we're sort of separating the issue of suffering from sort of long-term effects of divorce. So I don't think anybody would argue that it's, you know, not hard on children when mom and dad don't get along, whether they're or divorced. But I think that a lot of us, certainly I did before I actually started delving into the studies, felt that divorce causes children to have worse long-term outcomes. You know, they're more likely to become criminals, less likely to go to school, less likely to get good jobs. Right. You know, I sort of had this false idea in the back of my mind. And it actually turns out that there is no evidence for this. And I think part of the reason why we have this belief is, again, because our society is trying to discourage divorce, and that it's, you know, we kind of want people to have this idea that it's going to ruin your children's lives, because that's more likely to keep you married. But that isn't, for people who then go through divorce, that just adds this extra layer of unnecessary guilt and shame that there's no, you know, rational or scientific basis for.
So let me ask you a question about the innocent victim now, because is it strictly about the children, or do some partners claim that they're the innocent victim?
So definitely some partners claim that they're the innocent victim too. And when we our first draft of the chapter, it actually included both spouses and children, because we had read some claims that once people get divorced, that the divorced spouses become alcoholics and lose their jobs and live in abject misery. And they didn't seem to square with what we had seen. Many people who get divorced, many people don't know completely
right.
fall apart. But we actually dropped that from the chapter, just because there wasn't enough meat to it. They're just, nobody's really written about it. This is just something that comes up in self-help books. People make these throwaway comments. Whereas for children, people have actually tried to study this. So there was something for us to, there was a literature for us to go to and examine and talk about.
Right.
Whereas there wasn't, the rest is just sort of like rumor and innuendo.
Well, and the reason why I want to debate that point is because if you are in a relationship, and if the relationship is thriving, you're contributing to that. If the relationship is suffering, you're probably also contributing to that. And it's not to say that there's equal responsibility, but it's sort of the idea of, really? I mean, I have this happen all the time when people come into my office, especially when one partner is done and they're doing the, quote, drop-off session, where they're coming in and it's like, okay.
That's a great
Don't
term.
You love that? Yeah, we don't much like it, because it's like, okay, then we're left with the spouse. And there's like, well, I had no idea this person was unhappy. I'm like, really? They've been telling you for 10 years. I actually did have a couple. Married 25 years. He was unhappy for 19. She knew about it for 4, and then they show up in my office and it's kind of like, okay, how am I, what would you like me to do with this? This was the prototypical drop off. And it's like, you can't claim you didn't know.
Right. But don't you feel, I mean, I'd be interested to know, since you are an expert in this. I have often thought that maybe this idea of blame is something that we should try to get rid of a little bit more in our society, rather than saying everyone's to blame. I just feel like human relationships are so complicated, and everyone has their issues and shortcomings
right.
and problems. And maybe even having a narrative of blame is
right.
not
well,
helpful.
What I say to my
causally responsible, right. not necessarily morally
well,
responsible.
And what I say to my clients is, I actually tell people, I don't do guilt and blame. I find them a waste of time and a waste of energy. I do ownership and responsibility.
That makes sense.
We have a term that's sort of reminiscent in the book of your drop-off session, which I really like. We describe it as the poison sun. The poison sun is the opposite of a honeymoon, where period at the end of the marriage, where things are bad enough that no matter what you do, the other person will see it in the bad light and interpret it as a negative thing.
Right.
And you essentially can't win. I'm sure you see some of that in your office too, where even when they're trying, they're just sufficiently far apart that almost nothing seems to connect. Kind of the opposite of, like, you know, you can do the most sort of weird things to each other during the honeymoon that the other person will just think it's cute and adorable.
Right, it becomes a quirk, a lovable little quirk versus a deeply annoying, you know, personal. I mean, I have people do that all the time. It's like, do you really think that your partner did that personally to upset you? And for people who say yes, it's like, really? Because they have flipped that switch and they have, what's the opposite? What would be the opposite of rose-colored glasses?
The poison sun.
I love that. Because instead of giving your partner the benefit of the doubt that they just didn't know that what we're doing was bothersome, no, you knew and you did it purposely and you keep doing it purposely, even though I've never said a word about it that it bothers me.
So to your point about, you know, innocent victim and whether that includes the spouse, we dropped it for the reason that Danielle said, but also for the reason that you said, which is ultimately the children are innocent in the sense that they didn't sign up for this, and special care needs to be taken with them or for them because they didn't sign up for it. The spouse, however they may feel aggrieved if a marriage is ending, they signed up for it, and it
exactly.
takes you to tango.
Exactly.
So they're not innocent, even if they may have been fairly treated by their spouse
right.
in some way.
Right. And I so appreciate that you guys are bringing this out because, you know, outsiders, whether it's people pushing you to get married, people pushing you to stay married, people pushing you to get divorced, whoever they are, unless you, somebody has asked you specifically, but even then, I think the outsiders need to be really careful because this isn't about them. This is about you and your partner and your family. And it's getting married should be a really thought out decision, and ending a marriage. I don't think people end marriages on a whim.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree. So here's another one of the sacred cows that we point out in the book. We call it the defective cow.
Okay.
So the defective cow is the narrative which can't point it at men, but is more typically pointed at women. The concept of the cow is, you said you were in love when you got married. Now you say the marriage isn't working for you. So you've lost your way, and that means you're a bad and or lazy person. You're defective. And all we need to do is fix you as a human being, and then your marriage
right.
will be fine. Again, that this drives people towards feeling bad about themselves and thinking that their interest in leaving the marriage is a personal failing of theirs. And of course, for some people, it may be. We're certainly not saying that. But surely, you know, there are extreme situations where if you're in a physically abusive relationship, you're not defective if you want to leave your marriage. And there is a very wide gray area where people can grow apart. And sometimes they grow back together again, but, you know, probably the most egregious version of the defective cow is when the woman in the marriage says that she's no longer finding her husband attractive and doesn't want to have sex with him. And this is then turned into she has a libido problem and should go
right.
see a doctor.
Well, and this is a narrative that comes into my office all the time, that the gist of it is fix my partner and everything will be fine. And my internal response to that, and sometimes I will phrase it in some ways externally, is your partner's not broken. This is not the problem here. But that's what people want to do because it's easier for me if my partner is broken, then I don't have to do anything different. The example you're giving, I don't have to take time to make my wife feel special and appreciated. I don't have to lose the 50 pounds that I've put on since we got married. I don't have to take a shower. She's just supposed to have sex with her. She's my wife.
Right.
Right. And the issue of sex is, you know, particularly touchy But the same actually plays out on lots of different fronts. And instead of suggesting in your office the individual sitting in the other chair ought to get fixed, I mean, that's just not a helpful narrative during marriage counseling or during divorce, that some broken one who caused the marriage not to fail. Obviously, people wanted the marriage to work.
Right. And
well,
this is,
at least in theory, at least in theory, they want the marriage to work.
Right. Well, they may have decided after 10, 20, 30 years that they no longer want it to work. And maybe that narrative of brokenness and failure shouldn't follow people into divorce if they're making what may be the best choice for them and for their family. I mean, sometimes the best choice is to break up your marriage. And if you're making that in a that decision in a thoughtful way, and I think it takes a lot of bravery in a lot of cases to make that decision, this sort of narrative that you failed and that you are not capable of holding a marriage together and so on, that it's really unfortunate that we attach that to people who are divorced, because I think in many cases it's really not any more warranted than it was when they were married,
right,
and having
or
problems.
The fact that they probably, in some cases, they never should have gotten married in the first place, and now they're taking care of that. But again, this is a very interesting conversation. And again, I really appreciate the acknowledgement, the complexity of it. So can you tell people where they can get more information, where they can find your wonderful book?
Well, they can just Google Sacred Cows with either my name, Astro Teller, or Danielle Teller. And lots of examples. We have a website, sacredcowsthebook.com. You can also go to Amazon or to Google Books or lots of other things and find a Kindle version or a paperback version and order it.
Or Audible.
That's right. In
okay.
All formats.
Well, Ed, thank you so much for being here. And, you guys pointed out, relationships are complicated. It's too simple to say yes, no, good, bad, black, white, stay married, get divorced. This really requires a lot more thought, and it's really people pay attention to the sacred cows, whether it's sacred cows about marriage or whether it's sacred cows about divorce, because as I said before, I don't believe that miserable and marriage should be used in the same sentence, but studies show that it takes 6 to 7 years of being unhappy before anybody seeks help. And in reality, we take better care of our cars than we do of our marriages. And the truth is, having a successful marriage is about the choices you and your partner make, and being successful at anything is a function of knowledge and action. So if you want to have a good marriage, and it's still possible in your marriage, because sometimes it's not, that's okay. The question you have to answer is, do you want that knowledge, and are you willing to put it into practice? And to keep listening and get more information about having a successful marriage, you can join me next week when my guest will be Dr. David Reiber for a conversation about how a strong marriage can benefit your children. And until then, stay loving.